It's overdue, but now the time is right. Yeah, it's up to you to make it real. So take me, take me back to paradise. Take me back to paradise.
I love you.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what is up, my peoples? What up? Ah, boy, feels good to be doing this again. It's like an itch.
Yeah, you know? It sure is, and especially today, because, you know, we're actually recording this show a day early. And it's Monday, which is Labor Day here in the United States, for those of you listening from outside of the U.S. And today is actually the biggest non-release day in the history of our show.
Yeah, we're putting up record numbers today. And it's just, well, first of all, it's super humbling. So thank you, everyone, to, you know, who's listening and who's new. Welcome. But yeah, today's just been off the chain awesome.
Yeah,
with people downloading and listening to our latest episode and also previous episodes. So
yeah, thank you to everybody that's listened, supported, to everybody that's interacting on Twitter, recommending the show to your friends, using the adding the Fanboy Garage or hashtagging us to get the word out. Everyone who's wearing T-shirts and putting up stickers just to get the Fanboy Garage name out there, we're just so appreciative of that. And it gets us really excited to do this every week. And just, you know, thank you to everybody. And like Aaron said, thanks to, you know, any of the new listeners who may be listening now. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. And hopefully you'll become a part of this community too now and start interacting. And we'll see some new names and faces on Twitter getting involved in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you guys are listening and, you know, typically what we do before the show is we throw out, you know, requests on Twitter if folks have any questions to or any topics that they want us to cover. So I'm thinking, you know what, we should probably also broaden that to beyond Twitter, right? So if folks are listening and you may not have a Twitter account, please feel free to email us at thefanboygarage.com. We were more than happy to answer any of your questions if that is your preference. Or smoke signal, or
yeah, write us a
maybe
letter.
Maybe we'll have to get onto some other social channels, but you know, email and or Twitter is probably the best way to kind of field your questions. So if there's anything you want us to cover, anything that you want us to really dig in on, please shoot it out to us.
Yeah, and if you go to thefanboygarage.com, while you're there, you could also pick up some merchandise, but that's beside the point. You go to the contact the show button. You click that, you send us an email, even if it's not a question, just let us know. You know, if you're listening and you're not on Twitter, because you hear us talking about Twitter a lot, let us know, you know, what you're on. Are you on Instagram? Are you on Facebook? You know, maybe we'll expand this thing out to all of social media. Or if you're on nothing, then feel free to email us that question and just get involved that way. But yeah, we'd like to know where, like, if you're not on Twitter, where are you, so that we can start interacting with all of our listeners?
Yeah, cool. So shall we kick this bad boy off with a little jab cross like our boy Billy D. Williams?
Yes, Billy D. Williams, smooth man, smooth.
Yeah, and he's doing it with sunglasses on. And
he sure is.
So for folks that don't know, Billy D. Williams recently tweeted out a video of him in a boxing gym. You know, shuffling it up, doing a little, you know, jab, cross, hook, uppercut. The dude is like, is he in his 70s, 80s maybe? No, 70s. He has to be in his 70s. But you know, as old as he is, doing it, and he's doing it literally with this like Lando grin on, and his it's like sunglasses on. He's you know,
Billy
Dee
Williams
throwing those punches.
He is 81 years old.
Damn, he's 81?
Yes, he is.
Man, do I feel like an underachiever.
Okay. That's,
wow.
I definitely don't feel cool, but I don't know if I feel like an underachiever. But yeah, he is cool, man.
God bless
that,
him.
Yeah, that you got that right.
Billy D, cool as hell.
Yep.
Man. Anyways,
yeah.
Okay.
So we got a little house cleaning to do here. Or garage cleaning. A couple of things. You know, last week, right after we recorded the episode, this news broke, or rumor broke, that, you know, Alec Baldwin was maybe going to be playing Thomas Wayne in the Joker movie, the standalone Joker movie that Joaquin Phoenix is starring in. And then I think like 5 minutes later that got debunked, or he was no longer going to be in it or whatever. Right. So we're seeing, and then there was another one where John Travolta might be doing it. And it's like, you know, this is kind of what I was talking about before, where I said, like, I try to read as little now as possible about these types of things, because that was like the rumor mill giveth and the rumor mill taketh away. Like, that was the best and worst of, or the worst of the rumor mill, you know, and trying to get, when you try to get too invested in stories like that, and it's just like, that was all over the place.
Yeah, people's hype meters went, like, through the roof about the movie, about the Joker movie. And I also think that people kind of got a little crazy about it, as fandom often does these days. So, you know, who knows what his real reasonings are. I mean, he did cite scheduling issues. You know, I thought it was unfortunate, because I really do think he is an amazing actor. I think just given the talent that movie's pulling, you know, would have made for an interesting role for him to play. Unfortunately, it wasn't in the cards or in his schedule.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, no, it's a shame, because it happened relatively quickly. I think it was like, we heard in the afternoon that he was signed on, and then by the next day, maybe 24 hours later, it was over.
Yeah, so. And it's actually a good thing, because we said, oh, man, I wish that news would have broke, like, right before we started recording. And then it's a good thing it didn't, because by the time the show would have aired, it would have already been wrong.
Yeah, we would have been all hyped up about it. But, oh, well, man.
And then a couple other things. You know, we talked about the Dave Bautista thing before, when we talked about, you know, the whole James Gunn thing with Guardians of the Galaxy. And, you know, we were asked the question of, you know, whether we thought that this would affect, you know, Dave Bautista and how studios looked at him. But Dave Bautista is now just, he can't shut up about this thing.
Dude, he's drawing a very distinct, thick trench in the sand. It's not even a line.
Yeah.
He basically said recently, and probably as of this morning, that he will likely not be in the next Guardians of the Galaxy. And he seems quite upset about the hold, which has been put on indefinitely for the film. And it wasn't just about him not wanting to do the film. He's like, I no longer want to work with Disney.
Yeah, or he said he might not want to work with Disney, something like that.
So.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I guess kudos to the dude for really sticking to his guns. You know, who knows what kind of repercussions this will have for him later on down the road. I mean, obviously we've talked about this before, but he has made, you know, some inroads in terms of his acting career, and picking a fight with the biggest kid on the yard may not help him, but who knows?
We'll see. Yeah. And, you know, like we mentioned, he's in a different position than a lot of people, because he had money already. He had a successful career before he became an actor that he could, you know, revisit if need be. But yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't think his, you know, sticking up for James Gunn at the time would have a negative effect on him. But now this is a little different, you know, and this is a guy now who's almost going to start to cross that line into like diva territory, I think, and going to get a little bit of a bad rap the more he just kind of openly talks like this, you know, and he's the only one doing it. So I guess on one, you know, like you said, you want to give him some kudos for holding his ground and for sticking up for someone that he cares about. But I don't know. I don't know that it's the best look.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little dicey. I mean, time will tell. See where it goes for him.
Yeah. A couple other small things that came out today, actually. There's a title for the new Die Hard movie.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you heard our action movie episode back in episode 2, you know, we're big fans of the Die Hard. And the sixth movie now in the franchise is going to be titled McLean.
So it's not even like Die Hard. Is it like Die Hard colon McLean? Or is it just
No,
McLean?
I think it's just McLean.
I don't know how I feel about this, man.
About another Die Hard or the title?
It's just about another Die Hard at this point. I think when we talked way back, episode 2, I think I said I didn't watch the... No, actually, I did see the... Is it Live Free or Die Hard? Or
that's the one with Timothy Oliphant?
Yeah. That one, I didn't even see the last one.
Good Day to Die Hard?
Didn't see it.
I have not seen it either. I actually have seen every Die Hard in the theater, except this last one, I did not see at all.
Yeah.
And I obviously didn't hear any good things about it, but so I wasn't rushing out to go see it. But
And if I'm in striking, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but those last two movies were like PG-13, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure Live Free or Die Hard was. Assuming was A Good Day to Die Hard was at all.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother effer. Like, no. They cut out.
Yeah.
Which is just so... God, that's like taking away Captain America's shield to me. So it's like, how do you do that? You know, it's like not putting I'll Be Back in a Terminator movie.
Yeah, well, yeah. I guess.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and these days, I mean, you're telling me you can't have that one little line and still have it be PG-13?
Right?
Like that one moment?
For example, there was one scene in a movie recently that caught me off guard, and it was a PG-13 movie. And it was Ready Player One when they throw Chucky out, and the guy's like, "Oh my God, it's effing Chucky!" Like, they had one F-bomb to use, and they used it appropriately in that scene, but it still managed to be a PG-13 film. I don't know why they just couldn't say mother effer.
I don't know. Yeah, but that's from what I understand, there were more issues than that in the last movie.
Well. I wouldn't really know. I didn't see it. But, I mean, I don't even know if I want this movie at all. I don't, you know.
I'm wondering, I've heard nothing about it. In fact, I didn't even realize it was a thing until today when I saw that they announced the title. And maybe with that title, maybe they're going to, you know, shift gears a little bit and make it more of like a personal character-driven, maybe grittier type of movie. I don't know. It would be weird, I think, to have this, like, have that title associated with like a big full-on, like, typical Die Hard action movie.
Yeah, I think that was the problem with the, at least the one that had Justin Long in it, was like,
that was the Live Free or Die Hard. Yeah.
Yeah, that was just like they're like, oh, you know, Die Hard 3 had that buddy thing going on with Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis, so we'll just do it again. And it was like, nah, not with Justin Long, not at PG-13, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, here's the hoping that they do, you know, some sort of character piece on John McClane. And, here's the hoping that Bruce Willis can actually have another good hit on his hands, because this dude has been sinking his ships recently. He did, like, what was it, Death Wish?
Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, I did, and it was...
Oh, geez, you did?
I mean, I didn't see it in... No, I didn't see it in theaters. Come on now.
Would you rent it?
No, I saw it.
You bootlegged it.
I watched it. We'll just
you
say
bootlegged
that.
It.
And it was not very good. It was not awful. It was weird in that, like, it's an Eli Roth movie, right? So... Like, the violence at the end, like, once it kicks in, is very Eli Roth and very out of place. It's like, wait a minute, what? That should be, like, in, like, a typical, like, horror movie.
Hostile film.
Yeah, like, that was weird. So that type of stuff, I was like, it just was, and we're actually going to talk about remakes in a little bit, because one of the questions revolves around that. But it just was, like, an unnecessary movie it didn't really do much to advance the story. But yeah, no, it wasn't particularly good movie. Mm. Not for, because of him. I mean, he's fine in it, but yeah, it was probably probably sounded better on paper. Although, was Joe Carnahan, your buddy, attached to that at one point in time?
Oh yeah, I believe so. I believe so.
So that might have been a little bit more interesting, but
yeah, I mean, that dude makes really great action films. Yeah.
All right. And then the final thing, I know this is you're very excited about.
Oh.
They announced, or Steve Guttenberg, I guess, on Twitter, teased that there's going to be a new Police Academy movie.
Oh, God. It's like, let's just keep on going back to the well. Let's do it. We've got nothing new to tell. Let's just bring back the old stuff. I don't, oh, God, man. I'm, like, torn about this because And most people who, if anyone who's old enough, I mean, honestly, who have watched the Police Academy movies, I mean, they didn't really, the first maybe two were like not really all that good, maybe the first one wasn't all that good, but then they kind of picked up, right? Like maybe two or three or something. I don't remember.
It's actually, I think, more the opposite. I think the first one is the one that's considered like
the best
of the movies, like as an actor. Mm. I mean, none of them are considered, you know, great movies.
Oh, you know what? That's Kim Cattrall, right?
Yes.
She's in that one. Yep. Yes, that is a great one.
That one is the one that's the one that most people will say, okay, that one was the best. And then there's debates after that.
Patrol.
That's the fourth one. That's the last of the Steve Guttenberg ones.
I love that
one. I saw that in the theater.
That's a great one.
Yeah. I saw...
Yumma, 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 yumma. Yeah. Who be the man to kill my brother?
Yeah. David Spade, a young David Spade in that scene, in that movie.
That's right.
But yeah, there's, you know, I saw the first four in the theaters, actually. So I was always a big Police Academy fan. Not after Steve Guttenberg left, though. The fifth, sixth, and seventh are not, they're pretty awful.
I think I stopped watching them after that.
Yeah, most people did, but even 2, 3, and 4, like, they fall at least in the, like, it's kind of so bad it's good category. Like, they're not very good movies, but they have their moments and there's some funny parts in there. But yeah. Anyway, I don't know that the world needs a new one, and I don't know if that means, like, is it a remake? Is it a reboot? Is it a continuation?
You'd think he's somewhat attached to it, right? Like, so
I guess
Guttenberg is making he was in Ballers last season. It was actually really good, so who knows, maybe he's coming back, man.
Maybe
dude, leave that Police Academy to the side, bring me another Cocoon movie, bro.
Wow.
I could do Cocoon.
You're going all in on the Steve Guttenberg stuff.
Doing Cocoon.
You want Three Men and a Baby back too?
Skip that one.
No.
Garbage. Except when I was looking for that, like,
that kid in
shotgun.
Yeah. Yeah. That scared the crap out of me the first time somebody pointed that out to me.
But, like, I heard it's not even true. There's, like, a standee or something like that.
Either way, just, yeah, I mean, now, but at the time, you're like, wait, what?
That's like the whole The Wizard of Oz thing. You heard about that one?
Yeah, with the guy hangs himself.
But it's actually, I don't even think I've ever seen that either. I think it was like a bird.
No, that I've never seen, but you can see the kid in the window in Three Men and a Baby.
Oh, yeah, no, I have seen that.
Yeah.
But, ugh, yeah, some creepy stuff. Those were the Easter eggs we were looking for back
that
back
exactly.
In the,
those
you know
were real
mean?
Easter eggs back then, yeah, back man. In the day.
Creepy stuff happening.
Yeah.
It was like the kid in... Back to the Future 3 pointing to his penis.
I've never heard of that. Really?
Are you kidding me? You need, all right, dude. You need to Google creepy kid Back to the Future 3 and watch that. It's like a GIF. It's like the kid calls the camera closer to him, and then he like points to his penis, and then like points somewhere else. I forgot what it was.
Really?
Yeah, it's creepy as hell.
Okay.
It's like weird. And the poor kid probably had to use the bathroom. But
it's one of
Doc Brown's kids.
Okay, I'll have to check that out later.
Okay, let's get this bad boy back on the rails.
Yeah, we can get back into it. Let's get into the questions. We're going to start off with the simplest one from Matt V. He said, "Best movie TV facial hair." I don't see anyone beating Kenneth Branagh. And there's a visual aid here, which will mean nothing to those listening, but he shows two pictures of him with excellent facial hair.
Yeah. You want to go first? Because I got to think on this. I got to think about this one on the spot.
Well, mine's easy. I'm going way back because to me it's just, you know, Tommy Chong in any movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really, really have to. Oh, you know what I would say it is for me? Maybe this is true. I don't know. Yeah. It's Gary Oldman in Dracula. For some reason, his like
that is good facial hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's clean, and the chops and stuff like that he's got going on there in that movie. And it changes a couple of times because he goes like full blown beard.
Yeah, because he has different phases and
So I like, and then there's some. It goes like really. They do the like Vlad the Impaler type long mustache thing, and he's got this like nice little trim one. Whether he's like dapper chap, man, he's walking around in that gray suit with those blue sunglasses, floating around. Love that stuff. This is the second time we're bringing up Bram Stoker's Dracula, man.
Yes,
good
it
movie
is.
Though.
It great is a great movie. Yeah,
I was just watching it a little while ago. Some of the behind the scenes with Francis Ford Coppola talking about the special effects. So, here's an interesting thing since we're talking about it. He wanted to do his practical effects all like in camera or like double exposed film type stuff. He didn't want to do anything digitally. And he went to his current visual effects guy. I said, listen, this is what I'm thinking. The guy's like, you're crazy. You can't make this movie without, you know, doing some serious visual effects like on the computer. And he's like, well, that's not the way I'm going to roll. So the guy quit. He hired his 20-year-old son, Roman Coppola, to do the visual effects, who had been experimenting with stuff himself and was emerging a magician or something like that. So a lot of the creepy visual effects that you see in that film are all done like on camera.
Wow.
Like or through like you know, manipulating the exposure of the film.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, really cool. Because it's creepy as hell too. Like that whole scene where it's like the orgy scene.
Mm-hmm.
And like he comes, like he basically bursts into the room, and then like the like his brides or whatever, they like fly on the wall, and then one of them stands. Well, two of them are like connected to each other, and they like stand up and they form this like human spider thing. It's like creepy AF. Anyways, next question.
Speaking of great movies, Brent asks: Face Off, good movie, bad movie? So bad it's good. For him, it's the latter. I love Face Off. I actually think Face Off is a good movie, a real good movie. As I mentioned back again in that action movie episode, I am a huge John Woo fan, and even though his U.S. output was not particularly memorable, I thought Face Off was by far his best work that he did as when he came over here to the U.S. I think it's a great movie. I think that what Nicolas Cage and John Travolta did in that movie, where they're, I think they did an amazing job of basically playing the other person.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of giving off that idea that, you know, okay, you know, you believed that John Travolta was Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Cage was John Travolta. And I'm a big fan of Face Off.
So you're not in the, you're like in the, it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Camp. Okay. I think, you know, for me, I initially was in the like, oh yeah, I really like it because it's a good movie. But I've seen it recently and it's like kind of like not aged well for me. And but it's still like one of those, it's like, oh, but it's like bad kind of good. Film. I like it because just the idea of it is just like bananas to me. And I agree. I think the two of them do a great job at sort of playing each other in that way. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the thing that does it, that like kind of twists it for me, is that movie came out around another film, like in terms of timing, called Broken Arrow. Do you remember this movie?
Yes.
With Christian Slater? And I think it came after Broken Arrow, but I'm not exactly positive.
Broken Arrow, also a John Woo film, by the way.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Anyways, I think the problem I have with that film, with Face Off, is that John Travolta playing the bad guy in Broken Arrow was so good. Like, so good, right, that I think it almost felt the same in Face Off. That's the only problem I have with it, really. Is that it just, the similarities between John Travolta's like villain character felt very similar to me. Not that he was playing Nicolas Cage like that, if that makes any sense.
No, I get it. Yeah.
The translation kind of felt familiar.
Just looking at the years now, because now that you mentioned it, Face Off came out the year after Broken Arrow.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, I think that's what it was for me. Like recently, because I've actually watched both of those movies, around a little while ago. So Broken Arrow was great. I love that movie.
Yeah, that was the, that would be probably I have a soft spot for Hard Target, the Van Damme, because that was John Woo's first movie here in the U.S. And, you know, despite the fact that it's Van Damme and it's not what he really wanted the movie to be, I have a soft spot for that. But Broken Arrow and Face Off are by far the two best works that he did here. And then Mission Impossible 2 would be the worst of John Woo in the U.S., but it doesn't matter because everybody should just be watching The Killer and Hard Boiled anyway. so,
but more on that in episode 2. So
yeah, exactly.
Episode 2.
So now, where exactly do you sit then with Face Off?
It's bad that it's good.
So bad it's good now. Okay.
It's so bad that it's good. If you had asked me that like maybe 10 years ago, I'd have been like, oh, it's an amazing movie. But yeah.
All right. So Brandon Alvarado asks, DC Elseworld stories in the comics and animation and on screen. He says, I currently love the DCAU's foray into this topic with Justice League Gods and Monsters and Batman Gotham by Gaslight. So where do you stand with Elseworld stories across the whole fanboy spectrum?
So I have a particular comic in mind. It was The Darkest Night, if that – I'm going to have to Google that, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was called. And it was basically an Elseworld story about if Bruce Wayne had discovered Hal Jordan's ring. And essentially he's like – it's like Batman, but he's a Green Lantern. I thought that was like an amazing story, and I'd actually love to see that adapted to a animated film, because it was so good.
Yeah. It's called Batman in Darkest Night.
In Darkest Night, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a dope cover of a book.
Yes, it is. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. So that's one of my coveted comics in my collection. But yeah, it was a really cool story. And I think, it would be a fun one to see in animated form for sure. I know it will never happen in terms of like a cinematic version, like a live action. That's just too, you can barely get Batman right. Well, how are you going to combine the two? I mean, you definitely can't get Green Lantern right. So
yeah, well, maybe they will.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the one for me.
So are you... In general, though, are you a fan of the Elseworld?
Yeah,
concept?
No, I like it. I like those kinds of stories.
How about one like he mentions Gotham by Gaslight, which, you know, takes a completely new, different take, right?
It's like tracking down Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen that. I didn't hear good things about it, but the story sounds interesting to me. I think it's always interesting to see. It's like the the back in the day when they used to put like, oh, if RoboCop had gone up against the Predator, something like that. You know what I mean? When they start mixing things, I like seeing Batman, the character of Batman, get mixed in with something else from history or pop culture or something like that. And you know, those are really cool. And I think that it gives them freedom. It gives the writers freedom to kind of really tell some cool stories and really dig in on some of the favorite things, their favorite things that they love about the character, and bringing those to life for their readers. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Gotham by Gaslight. I mean, I read that book at the time and it was really cool. And I liked the animated movie a lot. I thought it was a real good adaptation. If you read the book and loved the book, then you'll certainly love the movie. For me, the ultimate Elseworlds tale is always going to be Kingdom Come, because Kingdom Come to me is that there are a few books, comic books, graphic novels, whatever, that I say they transcend the genre, and I put them on a list of like best things I've ever read of any kind of literature. Kingdom Come is one of those. The Preacher series is another one, but that's a discussion for another day. Kingdom Come is such an amazing story. It's so big in its scope, and it's one that it's always been sort of a dream of, I think, a lot of people, that one day they'll be able to pull that off, like, on the screen. And, you know, I don't know if that they ever will. My hope was that when they started this whole shared DC cinematic universe, movie universe, that, you know, they would one day be able to build to Kingdom Come the same way that Marvel was able to build to things like Civil War and Infinity War. You know, Infinity War being the type of movie that you didn't know that they'd be able to pull off because of the scope of it. So I'm hoping that that's something that they can somehow, maybe one day down the road, if we're all lucky, we can finally get a Kingdom Come movie. And if anybody hasn't read Kingdom Come, and I'm assuming a lot of our listeners have, you should go out immediately and read it, because it is truly one of the best anythings I've ever read in my life. And I try to read it at least once a year.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a great story that I think would do well. Like really, really well if it were turned into a film. So who knows? I mean, if they're doing this stuff with the Joker, I guess people should feel hopeful, right? That
yeah, I mean, that was my hope with these little side movies, that they were going to be more like Elseworld-like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's what this Joker movie is supposed to be.
It seems like it anyway, right?
Yeah. So who... We'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah. All right. So JRB asks, on average, how many years is it acceptable to remake a film or franchise? And will we ever see a Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings reboot?
Oh, man. I'll be honest with you, man. I wish I could say no, that we'll never see a reboot of those films.
Yeah, I don't think you can ever say no.
I don't think so either. I just think that this whole thing with Police Academy and Die Hard and all, and Death Wish, all these movies, they all come back regardless of how classic they are somehow. And unfortunately, I don't think that they're better than their original. I'd have to think about a couple of those. 3:10 to Yuma is probably a better film than its original and a couple of others. But I think we need at least 10 years, 10 or 15 years to get away from a franchise before it's rebooted. But if you think about the comic book landscape, I mean, these things are flipped over like every 3 to 4 years.
Right. Yeah.
Like Spider-Man, for example, like twice. I think probably in a, what, 6-year, 7-year period, it was flipped.
Yeah, flipped it was twice. That was a quick turn. We talked about that, like in the Spider-Man episode, and that was a quick turnaround, and it was a complete reboot, and that threw a lot of people, and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. I think it backfired on them.
Yeah, except when they did Homecoming, but that's
well,
because
that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, it was all the MCU thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you know, you think about this whole X-Men thing. We'll have X-Men Dark Phoenix, right? And I'm almost positive that, and, you know, mark my words now because I could be wrong, but I'd say I'm pretty positive that, Feige and the rest of the Marvel crew will recast and reboot shortly after.
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, it's harder with comic book characters and superhero comic book characters because we're so used to them, you know, we're so used to reestablishing them, right? So, like, I mean, Batman, we've seen multiple Batmen, right? We've seen multiple Supermen. So I don't think it, but we were able to separate them, right? Like, even now, look, they were going to be doing the Batman, and, like, not many people are sitting there saying, oh, man, not another Batman movie, really? You know, people get excited about it over time, as opposed to something like Lord of the Rings or the Harry Potter series. I think that would be a little weird, you know, because really, what can you reboot with those? I mean, you could just tell those same stories again with new actors, but, you know, I think that they did about as much with those movies as you possibly can, like with the characters. So I think it would be a little strange, but like you said, where there's money, there's always the chance. And obviously, as years go on, I mean, the Lord of the Rings trilogy was so grand in its scope, and it was one of those things that nobody ever thought was ever going to be pulled off cinematically. So while there are things that were left out of that and things that I guess you could incorporate in and kind of make it your own, that would be a pretty grand undertaking for somebody to want to have to redo. And the Harry Potter thing is just, there's so many of those movies. And they were based on books, obviously, that already existed. So, you know, I don't really know what else you could do with that.
I mean, there were some things that were cut out from the books as they made their way into, you know, the cinematic versions. But that was nothing really, you know, I think people would, like, clamor over to see again, you know what I mean?
Right, that's what I mean.
Essentially, it's pulled from the source material as faithfully as it could.
Yeah, and they're fairly timeless, right? I mean, I haven't seen most of the movies, but just knowing what I know about them, they are fairly timeless in far as the look and the feel.
Sure.
You know, so it's not like those things are going to, I mean, it'll be years before they age out, you know, and the effects are, you know, modern. I mean, they weren't made 30 years ago, so they'll hold up over time. But now to get back to the question about how long, you know, I don't think that there actually is a time period where I say, well, it should be at least this long or that long. I think it really depends on the movie. Like, for me, if the movie warrants a remake and you can actually do something to improve on something, I don't really care how long it takes for you to remake it. It's just that, in general, remakes tend to be kind of gratuitous cash grabs where they don't improve on the original. I mean, I could think of two examples where the remake...
Conan.
Well, that's one. I mean, that's where it didn't improve. But I have two examples where I could tell you flat out where the remake not only completely improved on the original, but reinvented it. And those movies are considered the classic versions. One is The Thing, right? John Carpenter's The Thing, which was a remake. And the other is The Fly, right? David Cronenberg's The Fly. So both, ironically, remakes of 50s like horror movies. That completely just obliterated the originals, took them into, like, new territory, expanded on them. You know, now, unfortunately, there's another remake of The Thing that came out, like, what, in 2011 or something like that?
All right, that was Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah, is not very good. That was unnecessary, but that's a whole different conversation. But, yeah, I mean, so I do think that those are the types of movies. Like, if you are going to do a remake, like, pick something that you can completely improve on and take it into new territory and make it its own thing. There are people who don't even probably realize that The Thing and The Fly are remakes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because those versions have become so iconic. So, yeah, I don't really know. Like, I mean, but then you look at the Red Dawns and the Point Breaks and, like you mentioned a few earlier, or the Total Recalls and things like that. That's like, those are just gratuitous cash grabs because the studio's looking for a brand name, right? They figure it's easy to sell a brand name than it is anything else.
So, living up to my namesake, I'm going to stir the pot a little bit, start some Sith. Planet of the Apes.
Right. Well, there you go. So
good, bad.
Yeah, I mean, I love this Planet of the Apes trilogy. It's become one of my favorite all-time movie trilogies. I'm a fan of the original Planet of the Apes,
mm-hmm.
And a couple of those movies, not necessarily the whole series. But I thought Matt Reeves gets a lot of the credit, but, you know, Rupert Wyatt started it with Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And then what Matt Reeves did just took it into a new stratosphere. Yeah, I thought that is, like, there you go. So there's your example. Again, another example of taking something. Now, though, those movies, though, are not really remakes, right? So they're really a prequels in a lot of ways. Essentially, you know, you could technically say that they're taking you up to the point where eventually, like, Charlton Heston's going to land, you know, on the Planet of the Apes. So they served a kind of a unique, they sort of hold a unique place in history where, I mean, you could argue that there are elements of the original, because they did, there are prequel elements in the original franchise as well, but, you know, if you're taking it just looking at Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes itself, I mean, these movies are set before that. So they're reboot, remake, prequel, kind of all rolled up and their own thing at the same time, all rolled up into one. And I think a really great blueprint for how you can take an established brand and set it in and bring it into a new, you know, for a new generation.
That's sort of where the Star Trek, the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek started, right? Was to keep itself sort of tethered to things that have happened before, but ultimately start something new, and then it just flopped.
Well, I mean,
it didn't flop, but it just wasn't. I don't think it lived up to the expectations.
Well, I mean, I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and we haven't really talked a lot about Star Trek on this show. We will, though, as we get closer to the premiere of Star Trek Discovery Season 2. But I love the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's a fantastic piece of just pop cinema, right? And now Star Trek Into Darkness is where they lose it, because they, you know, J.J. Abrams then gets stuck in remake mode, right? So he took his original concept, which was fine, but then he wound up saying, well, we're going to basically do like a take on the Wrath of Khan, and instead of making Benedict Cumberbatch's character its own thing, which he should have, because Benedict Cumberbatch is great, and he was great in that movie, he just shouldn't have been Khan. If they... You know, that stuff with Peter Weller in that, I thought was really good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you cut out that that final act where they're basically remaking and flipping the Wrath of Khan around, reversing the Spock and Kirk roles, like, I actually think Star Trek Into Darkness is an effective movie until the Wrath of Khan remake kicks in.
Right.
And then Star Trek Beyond, I was a fan of. I thought it was fun. I thought it was like a live action, a movie version of like an episode of the show if this cast had been doing a weekly episode, so I actually enjoyed that. But by that point, I think Into Darkness had some ill will there, and people didn't flock to Star Trek Beyond the way I think that Trek fans really should have. Yeah, I mean, everyone has different opinions on that. But for me, I don't think that remakes are. It's not based on time. I think it's based on what you can do, and is it necessary, you know, to even remake the movie, and can you improve on it? You know, we talked about Rob Zombie's Halloween, and like, to me, that was unnecessary. It didn't improve on anything. It just kind of changed some things, and I thought the changes didn't fit the franchise and didn't work for me. Some people did. Some people liked the changes, but, you know, that's, again, one of those things where, you know, it's up to individual taste.
Yeah, so kind of taking this question and flipping it a little bit, let's think about – well, I'm going to ask you a question about one movie that has been in production hell that is a remake that I personally don't think is necessary because the first is so good. But it might be one of those situations where once it gets remade, I'm like, the first one wasn't as good as I thought it was. That movie is The Crow. What do you think?
So to me – you know, I think I like the original Crow, okay? I saw that in the theaters as well, and I liked it then, and I've liked it even I still like it now. Not as much now as I did then, but great soundtrack though. But I see, to me, that's a story that I think you could remake, because for two reasons. One, I don't think that The Crow, the original Crow with Brandon Lee, is this iconic movie. I think it has like a cult following, and I think there are a lot of people that like it, but it's not like it was this huge blockbuster. You know, it got attention because, unfortunately, the passing of Brandon Lee filming it got it some attention, but it wasn't this huge blockbuster, and it's not a movie that's like this timeless classic that's always on television. The sequels, we're not even really going to talk much about, but,
horrid.
You know, I think that's a movie that's ripe for a remake, you know, if they could ever figure it out. I think that's something you could definitely build on, improve on, and kind of bring in for a new generation. So I think that's a great example.
Mm.
And all Spawn, right. too. Like, we're looking at Spawn, right? Tom McFarlane's working on a Spawn thing. And, you know, again, that's another movie. That movie came out, and it wasn't a huge blockbuster. And some people like it, some people don't. But, you know, there's
CGI.
Another... Well, yeah. There's another so story that you could definitely improve on and write and definitely make better and if you wanted to. There's room there. There's room for improvement there.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it with a lot of characters, and we've seen it now with Daredevil. We've seen it with the Punisher, right? We've seen it with where you could eventually get the characters right. So, you know, why not keep doing it until you get it right?
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Cool.
All right. So Ron Diesel, he asks, what are some of your most anticipated movies of the fall and winter?
God, this is bad because I have one. I'll say one. And of course I'm going to go see it. Well, I don't know actually if I'm going to go see it. That is Aquaman.
Right. Is that the one you don't know if you're going to go see?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
You're going to go see it.
Well, I might, but it's so full of other stuff to see. It's like packed. But I will say, I do want to see that Spider-Man animated film
Into
with
the Spider-Verse.
Miles Morales. I definitely want to see that. And Halloween. Duh.
Yeah.
Totally want to see Halloween. That looks amazing.
Yeah,
so,
Halloween is my most anticipated movie of the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Obviously, I as anyone who's listened to the show knows, the original Halloween's one of my favorite movies of all time, and that's one of my favorite film franchises of all time. So, and everything I've seen and read and heard about it gets me even more excited. So that's at the top of my list. Aquaman would be right behind it. I will be going to see it, and I am excited about it. I'm just not... I've yet to get to a point with Aquaman where I'm like, you know, super, super like losing sleep excited over it. I think Aquaman is going to wind up, well, assuming all things are equal, it's going to follow a similar trajectory as Wonder Woman, where like as it gets closer and the buzz starts to, you know, hopefully it's positive buzz, but as the buzz starts to generate for it, that will dictate like just how excited I get for it, like in the weeks leading up to it.
Yeah,
because Wonder Woman, by the time it was ready to come out, like I was like, I couldn't get there fast enough, but I wasn't like super excited about it when it like, you know, 6 months out. So Aquaman would definitely be on my list. And the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is something that I'm definitely interested in seeing. There's one movie, though, that I will say is I'm not anticipating it because I want to go see it necessarily, but I'm anticipating it because I'm just curious to see what it becomes, and that's Venom. Mm. So I'm really fascinated to see what happens to Venom. Like, I almost want it to come out soon just because I want to see the reaction, and I want to see if, you know, this movie, even though it's not part of the MCU, so we believe anyway, it very well could play a big factor in the MCU, because like, do you think that if Venom is not a hit, that's the end for Sony with the Spider-Man universe?
I don't know. I think It may be because you know, there hasn't been really anything else that's like in development or like in pre-production yet, right? So their universe isn't officially up and off the ground. I think they are hedging their bets on Venom for sure. And if it becomes a runaway success, then they're going to be like, yep, okay, we don't necessarily need Spider-Man to kick things off. I mean, they have been talking a lot about other stuff like Morbius and some other crap. But sorry, God, I got to like hold that back a little bit.
Is that the official title?
Morbius and all that other crap. I think if Venom does really, really well, they're just going to go, yep, we've got this down pat. Like, you know, everyone's going to, you know, we're just going to go. Like, we don't need Spider-Man for any of this, which is weird.
It is. It is weird.
I wouldn't be surprised if they continue going down the animated route. Actually, I think that'd actually be smart for them to do that.
That's if Venom's successful?
No.
Regardless.
What if the Into the Spider-Verse connects with Venom in some weird like animated / you know, live action thing? Who the hell knows?
Huh? That would be interesting. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think they're going for two different audiences. Yeah. I have a feeling, but based on what I've seen. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm just curious about that. Like, I just think it's, again, I'm not excited for it because I want to rush out to see it, but I'm excited for it to exist just because I'd like to see what the results are and what the fallout is. And
when does it come out? November?
October 5th, I think. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of quiet.
It is now. Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, after when the trailer came out, there was some, you know, hype for it, but
it's only been like there's only been two trailers.
I mean, it's a month away now and it's gotten a lot quieter.
Like, we need some TV spots.
Yeah.
Like, where's the merchant? Like, they're not, you can tell that they're not really rolling out the big guns for this. There's no merchandise.
Right.
There's none of that. You know, we're not going to see Venom on like Slurpee cups.
Doesn't look like it. No. Yeah, that would already be out at this point. Yeah, this is not being marketed like that. They're doing that purposely because maybe they're a little worried, you know, regardless of how the movie turns out, like as far as quality wise, that it's not going to be, you know, maybe they're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, maybe they don't think that it's necessarily going to be a huge blockbuster, so they're not going to market it as such. And then they could always turn around and say, well, you know, this was never supposed to be that.
I want to see what the budget is for this film, because I have a sneaking suspicion that they're lowballing. No, it's not up yet.
Yeah, that's, I don't know that sometimes they don't.
They're lowballing the crap out of this movie. I bet that this thing is like a low budget film. I bet it's probably like, I don't know, 85.
Yeah, you think with all that CGI and stuff?
Maybe 100, maybe 125 max.
Okay. Yeah, but you could very well be right.
If they spend more than that, shame on them.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen it, obviously, so we don't know what the full scope of the thing is yet.
Yeah,
but
just looking at the poster. Yeah. Whack.
All right.
I hope it's good. And for everyone that's going to go see it, I hope you guys are treated to something really special.
So, I guess, Ron, to answer your question, Aaron's apparently not going to be going to the movies much the next three months.
Nah, man. Going to be like hunkered down here, counting my days till Avengers, I guess, Avengers 4, or, you know, Captain Marvel and Star Wars.
He's going to be revisiting the Police Academy box set.
Oh, man. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, let me know when you get to Mission to Moscow.
Yeah, I don't even...
With Ron Perlman.
God, I gotta, like, go back and...
No, you don't. You don't have to go back to Mission, because then you'll never forgive me.
I just hate it all. Yeah. The funny thing is that it kind of ran a similar track to, like, the Revenge of the Nerds thing. Revenge of the Nerds, like, 1 and 2 were, like, amazing. And then they went 3, 4. Then they went, like, back to school. Like...
They became like TV movies after a while, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And it was just really, they brought back like the original cast, some of them. except for the guy, I forgot his name, the guy that played Gilbert.
Oh, Anthony. Yeah, well, he was like an actual star at that point.
Yeah, he was like...
He was on ER, I think, but, you know, he's not going to show up.
I'm not going back to this crap.
Yeah. He didn't even technically, I mean, he barely was in two because he was in like just one scene because he didn't go on the trip with them in two.
That's right.
Because he just had like a contractual obligation to do like a cameo. So he does like a little brief thing. You're the first person, I think, that I've ever heard actually say that the first two movies were awesome because I've always been a big fan of Revenge of the Nerds 2 and I thought I was the only one.
Dude, I love Revenge of the Nerds 2.
Nerds in like Paradise.
It's just, Nerds in Paradise, man. It's just like that whole scene where they find, like, they're on the island, they find that hidden bunker.
Bradley Whitford.
Yeah, dude, like all of that.
Yeah.
And then Ogre becomes a nerd.
Yeah. I'm with you. No, I get it. Barry Sobel, who was like a thing at that point, you know, doing his rapping. Yeah.
All right. Awesome.
Big, yeah, so everyone, there's our recommendation for the week. Revenge of the Nerds 2, Nerds in Paradise.
Awesome. Go check it out.
You can actually get the, I believe they come on like a DVD set where they're both together. So for like, you can probably get it at like 7-Eleven for like $4.
or you missed the plug. You can go through our affiliate link.
Oh, right. Better. Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. You can do that too. All right. So Nathan Odinson, he says, how would you feel about a live action Batman Beyond movie? It would be, and he gets specific with what the movie would be. It would be set in the Tim Burton universe, and Michael Keaton reprises his role as old Bruce Wayne mentoring Terry McGinnis. They go up against Damian, who is the new head of the Demon and leader of the League of Assassins.
Yeah. So Nathan, I think he might be a new listener. Welcome to the crowd, bro. That's a damn good question. I think you should start writing that right now.
Yeah. I'm all in on that.
Sign me up. Bringing back Michael Keaton as an older Batman. Perfect.
Yes.
The idea of having Damian be the antagonist, also perfect. I think, well, let's take this a little deeper. Who would you cast as Terry McGinnis?
Oh, so we're doing casting now.
Let's see.
Yeah, I mean, first, before you do that, yes, I would be all in on that idea. I would love to see a Batman Beyond movie, and I think that whole premise that he puts out there works. I don't know if it works necessarily for, like, mainstream audiences, but who cares about them? They'll just have to come along for the ride. As a Batman fan and a fan of Batman Beyond, yes, I love that whole idea. Who would I cast as Terry McGinnis? Jeez, I'm not sure. I'm not as up on it. Obviously, would have to be a younger actor, and I'm not as well versed these days in, like, you know, who those would be.
Like teenager.
Yeah, like, I mean, I didn't really even know who Tom Holland was. I mean, I just knew the name, like, before he got cast as Peter Parker. So that's not really my wheelhouse right now, but I don't know. Why? Who would you... Do you have any ideas?
So I have an actor in my mind, but I don't know what his name is. So I'm going to have to, like, Google it real quick.
Where's he from?
You see that movie, like, Love You, Simon or something like that? Love, Simon?
No.
Simon, I Love You, Simon. Hold on. Right now. Of course, that's not what it's called. it's like Box Office Mojo really doesn't give you any, like, room for...
Well, there is a movie called Love, Simon that came out this year. Greg Berlanti of the Arrowverse fame directed it.
That kid. Whoever that... Actors.
There's a few. There's Nick Robinson. There's
the main actor. Josh, the kid who's getting top billing. Nick Robinson.
Yeah, I guess it would be Nick Robinson. Yeah,
I've seen him in something else. I think.
I mean, he looks the part. I know nothing of him, so I'll take your word for it.
He's in Jurassic World, man.
Which I still haven't seen. So there you go.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
You, bro.
Yeah, I gotta get
you,
on that.
Oh, do you watch Boardwalk Empire?
I did not watch Boardwalk Empire.
So, me neither. Okay, so
he's
we're
on
we're
that
striking
too.
Out Yeah, apparently.
Oh, all right. So then, yeah. So there you go. There's. I'll join you and say that's my pick.
Yeah, I think this kid would make a good Terry McGinnis for sure. Yes.
Although Michael Keaton as an old cranky Bruce Wayne, that's like there's a home run casting right there.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I don't even care who Terry McGinnis is at that point.
Yeah, it would be really cool to see that for sure. And hell, bring Tim Burton back to direct. You know, create that universe again, create that world. I think people would go crazy over it. You know, just that. I mean, Keaton is everything. You know.
Well, and now he's going through like a career renaissance, kind of. So it's like the perfect timing, almost. You know, because now he's cool again, and he's now a new generation of people are familiar with him because of mm-hmm. Spider-Man: Homecoming and I guess Birdman to a lesser extent, but like he's a hot name again. And now I think you could totally see him, and he's always had that unhinged quality to him, which is why Tim Burton cast him in Batman to begin with and Bruce Wayne. So yeah, I think it's perfect. Were you a fan of Batman Beyond the show?
Yeah, man. I used to watch it like all the time.
Yeah.
And they had that, what was it, the animated movie, The Return of the Joker?
Which is great, yep.
Which was awesome. But yeah, I liked the style. I mean, it felt very, very reminiscent to the animated series, but they just kind of evolved it a little bit and brought some of that futuristic stuff. But yeah, dude, I used to watch it frequently.
Now, here's the thing, though. So he throws out this very specific kind of concept. Do you think, though, that they would need to do something before to sort of introduce some of those characters? Or are we just going to say, okay, this is going to be set. This is basically going to be fast forward. Let's pretend that, you know, Tim Burton's whole universe is still a thing. And then we're just going to fast forward and tell a future version of the story set in that exact universe. Or is this something that we're going to set up in some other way to introduce you to Damian and some of these other characters that, you know, people may not be as familiar with unless you read the comics?
So you mean like flashback the whole thing?
I don't know. That's what I'm just saying. Like, I don't know how, I mean,
because the premise sounds great. The way that they set it up in the original show, it was like they had the Batman, you know, it starts off with obviously Batman in the Batman Beyond costume, and he gets like hurt and he's clearly older in the suit. You know what I mean? Like in the Batman Beyond suit. And then he's just basically like, I can't do this anymore. So, I mean, I could see it starting off that way. I don't necessarily think you need an introduction, like an in-depth introduction to Damian. It just could be some, you know, some crazy kid wreaking havoc in Gotham City, and then ultimately it's revealed through maybe a flashback that this is Bruce's kid who's like unhinged and you know, causing ruckus.
I like that too. Now here's the thing, so are you, I mean, you watched all of those Bruce Timm universe shows, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know that the, I guess technically the series finale of Batman Beyond, or what became the series finale for Batman Beyond, was in a Justice League Unlimited episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
They did an episode called Epilogue, which is great, where it revealed that Terry McGinnis is actually Bruce Wayne's son.
Clone or something. Oh, yeah.
He's Bruce Wayne's, he's Bruce Wayne's his biological father. But yeah, there was a whole thing with, you know, Amanda Waller was involved, and, there was a whole thing. But yeah, and that's how he became kind of predestined to become Batman.
Right.
So, I mean, do we go down that road then and start to have like this battle of
sun?
Yeah, I mean, then it becomes even more intriguing. I'm starting to love this. In fact, you know what? No, we need this now. I'm sorry. Put everything on hold. Somebody call Matt Reeves. Tell them to get on the phone with Nathan Odinson, and we need this. This needs to occur immediately, because the more I talk about this, the more excited I'm getting about it.
Yeah. It's almost like I mean, of course, it's got to go back to Star Wars, but like it's that whole, you know, heritage thing, or like sense of entitlement, where, you know, Rey is holding Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, and Kylo's like, that belongs to me, you know. So it'd be really cool to to have that kind of dynamic between the two characters where Terry McGinnis is wearing the cowl and Damian's like, that belongs to me, you know, like that's mine by right.
Yeah, I love all that. I'm loving everything about this. And that's the first I've ever heard of. I mean, obviously people have talked about Batman Beyond movies before.
But that whole
concept was the first. This thing that Nathan points out with the whole Damian, I mean, that just adds a whole new layer. I mean, that could this could become a whole gigantic series by itself.
And they're like two brothers going head to head. Bruce dies. Oof.
Yeah, and if
it's
DC,
like, it's like the Thor thing.
Yeah, yeah, actually, yeah. And if DC is, you know, gonna go in this direction of kind of just making the best stories and not necessarily caring about like everything fitting into one continuity, like this is a great idea for that, right? Like you can make this its own thing that could still live in a world where Matt Reeves' The Batman exists.
Right.
And why right. not? No, like why that. Wouldn't you want that? Sort of that franchise within the franchise type thing that could be potentially big and it can live wherever. And if the rest of the universe eventually catches up to it down the road, then that's great. But it doesn't have to because it's so far in the future that right. it does, you know, the things can be completely separate.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I know that they're going to do some like stuff in the past or whatever, but the stuff in the future is really for me. I'm like, yeah, that's where you've got a lot of liberty to kind of stretch your legs and play. Because unfortunately, if Matt Reeves' Batman story is going to play at the past, he's still beholden to a particular timeline that's already been set. If he follows continuity, but in the future, it's fair game, right?
Yeah, that's like, what, yeah, that's.
Totally love it. I think it would be awesome to see a Batman Beyond story.
Yes. So.
And then what you do is. Okay,
but see, now I want that story, though. That's the only problem.
I mean, we spitball. You got all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, the Flash needs another Batman because Bruce Wayne is out for the count. So he goes to the future. He grabs Terry McGinnis and brings him in. There. Batman and. Future Batman in the past,
and that's how you can tie it all together.
There you go. Awesome.
Sweet. Sign us up. We're in.
Warner Brothers, pay me money. We just gave you an awesome idea.
Well, we got to. It's just you got to credit Nathan first. It was his idea. Yeah. We're just riffing on it, but
we'll cut you the check.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, that's good stuff right there.
Yes, sir. Were there any other questions?
That was it for the questions. I mean, there was a little bit of feedback from our topic last week on things that take you out of a movie. I know Tavo had chimed in with a scene from a movie that didn't ruin the movie for him, but it's something that just in the moment, it kind of took him out for a second, and that is the Phantom Punch in The Godfather.
Yep. And then Matt Vernier... followed that up with the Phantom Kick in Return of the Jedi.
Yes. Yeah, sure love did. All that you got to love, in the world of gifts, like nothing is sacred anymore. Nothing.
Seriously.
You can't get away with anything anymore.
Ugh, God. I'm telling you, that creepy kid in Back to the Future 3, that's a gift.
I will be looking at that. And I know, you know, Ron Diesel actually mentioned that. Something about how, like, for instance, how the Hulk, and this is your thing, right? The continuity king, the things that take him out are when the character, like the Hulk, is constantly kind of changing, like his tone. And that led to like a whole conversation about how, like, the Hulk, if you look at him, like, from like the Avengers movies to Ragnarok to Infinity War, like, he felt that he's gone back and forth from being like angry to weak to whatever, and that's something that kind of bothered him. I guess the idea of him being afraid of Thanos was something that he wasn't really a fan of. I always interpreted that a little differently. The way that they have the Hulk in Infinity War, I never really thought of it as like... Yes, he is clearly intimidated because he's not... It's the first time he's ever encountered anything that was as strong as he was. But... you know, to me, that was the classic case of like, I'm a wrestling fan. So, and a wrestling fan who grew up in the 80s, where you had people like Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan, right? And they were indestructible and they never lost and they couldn't be taken down. But then every once in a while, you had to have like a Big John Studd, a King Kong Bundy come out and take them down, you know, and make them look weak, because you ultimately needed the payoff of them overcoming that. Right? If something is just always indestructible and going forward, like, there's really no payoff to that, because there's no conflict. So I always kind of looked at it as that scene in Infinity War is almost like it's a pro wrestling sense. And I feel like we are going to get a payoff to that. And the Hulk is going to, you know, come back strong in the next movie. Plus, I think it tied into Ragnarok, too, where, you know, he was conflicted and kind of messy in Ragnarok.
Yeah.
So I think that he was a little fragile still. And you know, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I mean, the Hulk doesn't necessarily have to be the most multidimensional character, but there's no reason why he can't be. And he has been in the comics and in different ways that he's been portrayed over the years. They've kind of shifted in and out. So, but that was an interesting take on that. And that is definitely, though, something that I can see where people would be bothered by something like that if it does affect you.
Yeah, I know the commentary was really, really cool to see folks kind of going back and forth on that one. I don't know how I feel about that. You know, the idea, though, that let's do a quick replay. So in the first Avengers, you know, we don't really see him. Well, we see him like twice, right? And Bruce ultimately reveals to us that he is in control, right?
Right.
He's always angry, and you know, that's how, and he can equally tap into, you know, turning into the Hulk whenever he wants. Obviously that's probably the case when we get to Age of Ultron, right? Because obviously the Hulk is in the throes of battle with the rest of the Avengers. So there's that. And then, you know, Scarlett Johansson. That's what I was going to say. Scarlett Johansson and Scarlet Witch. But Black Widow ends up calming him down and all that. And then he ends up disappearing. I don't necessarily know if he's, you know, maybe yes, in Infinity War, we get a sort of less confident Hulk after he gets his ass kicked by Thanos. But I'm interested to see, you know, to your point about what that payoff is when we see the next Avengers movie. I wonder what that was, really, in terms of his inability to kind of come out. Somebody do this really in-depth theory about...
They did, yeah.
Heimdall sending the Hulk, because he needed to be in the final... I forgot what it was, but it was really, really good. It was really thoughtful. Or that there were scenes that were in the trailers for Infinity War that were actually meant for Avengers 4, something like that. So I don't know. I do think, though, that there was.
Theory there was that, like, what we were seeing in the trailers where the Hulk is in Wakanda was actually that was footage for Avengers 4, and that there's going to be some type of a time loop thing or whatever, and you know, they're going to wind up going back to that moment, and Hulk's going to be there as the Hulk this time, something like that. It was I'm not really doing it justice, but
along those lines.
But
you know, I do know that there was probably a last minute shuffle or change in terms of the Hulk coming up, because there was like some pop toys that were rolling out that had the Hulk busting out of the Hulk armor.
Yep.
So who knows why the Russos decided to hold back on that. But yeah, no, I certainly agree that we've gotten some wishy-washiness in terms of like the portrayal of Bruce Banner as well as the Hulk.
And but, a cast change too.
Well, that as well. I don't know. I like, Mark Ruffalo. Oh,
I do too, but I'm saying, as far as continuity goes, it's one of those things where you almost have to like throw your hands up in the air.
Yeah, you just
kind of
check your brain at the door.
Yeah.
Just like, nah, okay, this is what it is. I didn't mind Ed Norton. I have to say, though, like the style of the Hulk, I wasn't really a fan of. Like, I went along with it.
In the Incredible Hulk, you mean?
Yeah, the Incredible Hulk. Like, I kind of dug it a bit. in terms of like this, you know, there was a menacing factor of him, but he was too big, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that, you know, within the MCU, right, for all of its continuity and all of its, you know, the cohesiveness of it, like, there have been two, I guess, somewhat major casting changes that were made from Phase 1, where, you know, Edward Norton only played the Hulk in the one movie, and Terrence Howard played Rhodey in the first Iron Man. And then Don Cheadle took over, and like, people have basically just kind of forgotten about them and now accepted these new actors that have been granted in significantly more movies.
Right.
But like, you don't hear people really talking much about that.
Nah.
And you don't really hear people saying that, oh, I can't watch the original Iron Man, or, oh, I can't watch the Incredible Hulk because, you know, it's a different actor and it kind of throws me off.
Yeah.
Not that I don't think a lot of people are rushing out to watch Incredible Hulk at this point, but yeah, I wonder if that's something that bothers a lot of people or doesn't. I don't know.
I mean, does it bother people from like Batman Begins to The Dark Knight? Rachel Dawes gets swapped out.
Yeah, that to me is almost more jarring, because you're in the middle of an isolated trilogy of films, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, as opposed to an entire cinematic universe where like things are spread out now over time, but like there's a specific story that's being told in three parts, and from part one to part two, you have this very important character that's a totally different actress. But it doesn't bother me.
Thinking back on that, like, I'm sorry, I'll let you finish your thing, because I was going to totally jump into...
I was just going to say, it doesn't really bother me as much, because, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of the character, but I at least like what they did with the character and made that character very important in The Dark Knight.
So my comment was sort of similar to that, because I was going to say that I think that had the actor not changed, I think what we would have gotten in the finished product in terms of like the arc for that character would have been it would have come off very differently, and probably would have been less believable, I think. Because like Maggie Gyllenhaal,
she's a much better actress than
she like puts it all out there, and it's damn good stuff.
Yes.
In The Dark Knight, and I don't necessarily, and this is not to knock her, but I just don't think that Katie Holmes would have had the chops to do what Maggie Gyllenhaal did.
I agree, and I think that's why I don't have a problem with it, because I almost feel like, you know, it was a big improvement, and like you said, considering the weight of what was going on in The Dark Knight, I think it was like refreshing. So, yeah, and I guess the same thing could be said, and that's why nobody has an issue with it. I mean, Don Cheadle's a great actor, right? So nobody's really going to complain if Don Cheadle replaces somebody. And Mark Ruffalo's, you know, done great, too, as Bruce Banner. I like his Banner, and I like him. So, yeah, that's why I guess people aren't complaining. It's if it was the other way around, whereas what I think would drive people nuts, like if they downgraded... And that's maybe something we'll talk about in another episode. Has there ever been a time when, and maybe we'll throw this out there as a question, can you think of a casting change that has happened in the course of a series of movies that has been a significant downgrade for you instead of an upgrade, that has kind of caused you to look differently at that franchise?
I have one, but I'll save it.
Yeah. Let's see
save
what
for
we
the
get.
Twitter.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
And more importantly, I'm still on this whole Batman Beyond thing. I'm going to be upset when I wake up tomorrow and realize that it's not a thing.
Oh, God, man. I kind of wish it happens.
Yeah. So, anyway, on that note, let's start getting out of here. Of course, we'll do some plugs.
Go for it.
You can go to thefanboygarage.com. You can check out our merch store, our Amazon Associates link. Do all your Amazon shopping through there. It doesn't cost anything extra, and everything you buy will help this show out a bit. And of course, please continue to rate, review, like, subscribe to the show, wherever it is that you listen to the show. We're so appreciative of that. And of course, join the conversation and interact with us on Twitter. You can find me at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me at Starting Sith. And of course, you can follow the show at The Fanboy Garage. as well on Twitter. And of course, if you're listening, like we said in the beginning of the show, if you're not on Twitter, send us emails at the Fanboy Garage. I'm more than happy to take questions there. And we're about a month out from our debut at Comic-Con. Lots of stuff will be going on at the show. If there's anything in particular that you guys really want us to hone in on, certainly let us know. But we're hoping to bring you guys some really, really exciting content from the show.
Yeah, so. And if you are going to be at Comic-Con, because I think we're close enough now to where we can start to kind of ramp this up. If you are going to be at New York Comic-Con, let us know. Because we're going to have merch there. We're going to have, you know, some stuff. We're going to be recording some segments for the show. So, you know, if you want to be a part of all that, just give us a heads up because it's going to be a lot of people there. And we'll be able to, you know, we'll look out for you. We'll find a meeting place maybe where we can get together. And, you know, because we want to, you know, get our listeners taken care of first. So if you're out there and you're going to be there and you'd like to get your hands on some stuff or maybe even get some comments on the show, send us a message on Twitter or, you know, at the fanboygarage.com email link. And, you know, we'll be happy to meet up with you.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we should just close the doors in the garage and get the heck up out of here.
All right. Talk to you next time.
Bye.